Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Puman
Puman
Naivaiti
Naivaiti
Yad
Gatva
Bilasvargam
Bilasvargam
Gato Yata Pratyag Kamavida Iha Kim Asat Karmabhir Bhavet Puman Naivaiti Yad Gatva
Puman Naivaiti Yad Gatva
Bilasvargam Gato Yata
Bilasvargam Gato Yata
Pratyagdhama Vidaiha
Pratyagdhama Vidaiha
Kimma Sat Karma Bhir Bhavet
Kimma Sat Karma Bhir Bhavet
Puman Naivaiti Yad Gatva
Puman Naivaiti Yad Gatva
Bilasvargam Gato Yata
Bilasvargam Gato Yata
Pratyagdhama Vidhaiha
Pratyagdhama Vidhaiha
Kima Sat Karma Bhir Bhavet
Kima Sat Karma Bhir Bhavet
Puman Naivaiti Yad Gatva
Puman Naivaiti Yad Gatva
Bilasvargam Gato Yata
Bilasvargam Gato Yata
Pratyagdhama Vidhaiha
Pratyagdhama Vidhaiha
Kima Sat Karma Bhir Bhavet
Kima Sat Karma Bhir Bhavet
Puman,
Puman,
a human being.
A human being.
na,
na,
not,
not,
eva,
eva,
indeed,
indeed,
ati,
ati,
comes back,
yat,
yat,
to which,
gatva,
gatva,
having gone, vilasvaradam,
vilasvaradam,
to the region of the lower planetary system,
known as Patala.
Gata,
gata,
gone.
Yata,
yata,
like.
Pratyakdhama,
pratyakdhama,
the effulgent spiritual world.
Abhidha,
abhidha,
of the unintelligent man.
Iha,
iha,
in this material world.
Kim,
kim,
what benefit?
Asat karamabhi,
asat karamabhi,
with temporary fruit of activities.
Bhavet,
bhavet, there can be. Translation. Narad Muni had described that there is a bila, or hole, from which having entered one does not return. The Haryashvas understood the meaning of this allegory. Hardly once has a person who has entered the lower planetary system called Patala been seen to return. Similarly, if one enters the Vaikuntha Dhamma, Pratyagdhamma, he does not return to this material world. If there is such a place from which, having gone, one does not return to the miserable material condition of life, what is the use of jumping like monkeys in the temporary world and not seeing or understanding that place? What will be the profit? Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 15.6, yad gatva nanivartante tad dhamma paramam mama. There is a region from which, having gone, one does not return to the material world. This region has been repeatedly described. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Krishna says, janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvata chaktva deham punar jamma naitimam eti sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. If one can properly understand Krishna, who has already been described as the Supreme King, he does not return here after giving up his material body. This fact has been described in the verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Puman naivaiti yad gatva. He does not return to this material world, but returns home, back to Godhead, to live an eternally blissful life of knowledge. Why do people not care about this? What will be the benefit of taking birth again in this material world? Sometimes as a human being, sometimes a demigod, and sometimes a cat or dog. What is the benefit of wasting time in this way? Krishna has definitely asserted in Bhagavad Gita 8.15, Mam upetya punar janma dukhalayam ashashvatam napnuvanti mahatmana samsidhim paramam gata. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. One's real concern should be to free himself from the repetition of birth and death and attain the topmost perfection of life by living with the Supreme King in the spiritual world. In these verses, the sons of Daksha repeatedly say, Kim asat karma bahir bhavet? What is the use of impermanent fruitive activities? So this... this point here, Kim Asat Karma Bhir Bhavet. What is the use of performing temporary fruitive activities? This, along with the aspect of Puman Naivaiti Yad Gatva, but going to the heaven, the spiritual world. So these two are directly connected. That if one performs activities, and these activities are connected to the material world, or their karma, means material karma,
then one will stay in the material world. And if one performs one's activities, but not for material benefit, but for the pleasure of Krishna, then that gets you to the spiritual world. This is a very essential point, very simple point. Because in here, the active means what the discussions that go on. Here Haryashvas. Yeah. So they were the sons of Prajapati Daksha, and their business was to, or at least according to their father, was to populate the universe. That was his job, so he wanted to see that that would continue. And it's natural that, you know, the sons will help with the father's activities. But because they were so qualified and so nice, and they could perform the devotional activities very, very wonderfully, then Narad Muni suggested, why bother? Means there's so many who don't find themselves in such a position. Basically, then what happens is that you have the living entity should understand that his nature must be engaged in the Lord's service. That's the basic principle. Is that everyone has a conditioned nature, and that conditioned nature should be engaged in the Lord's service. So now, according to that nature, then one performs duties. Whatever you have the abilities as, you do that. And naturally, if there are higher abilities, that will take preference over lower. Because lower, so many people can do, higher, then less people can do. And for ourselves, we also get the most benefit out of the higher principles. So now here they were performing their austerities very nicely, and we see that mentioned that they were very gentle. Very gentle. So they had, and they were very, very, how do you say? They were very gentle, and they were very respectful of the authority of their father, and they were very sense-controlled. And we see as Narad Muni, he speaks this point about the material world, and they immediately grasp it. So they had great ability and knowledge. So this combined together is very good. This is the proper standard of the brahmachari. Is that if one can maintain all these in a great degree, then one, there's no need for marriage. If one can maintain them at least for some time, then one can naturally move into the aspect of marriage and successfully complete it. And if one finds great difficulty in maintaining these, then there'll be more difficulty with the marriage life, means extracting oneself. So here were very qualified students, and Narad Muni was explaining to them and about the transcendental realm and about the transcendental position of devotional service. So now if they could grasp that by hearing and realize it, then there's no need for them to get married according to the Vedic system. Especially here, according to the system of Daiva Varnashram, there's no need. Because if one gains the realization by hearing and by service, then it is not important. It's already been done. The living entity has already come to that platform. He's already attained that state of realization. So then, here he's recommending that since they have this ability, there's no need for them to get married. But we see here is then that is their activity. It means kim asat karma bhir bhavet, is that they were performing these activities of very nicely brahmacharya and detachment and austerity, but for a material purpose. So even though it was such high grade activity, it was still asat. It was still had nothing to do with the Lord. It was still not transcendental. So the first thing that Narad Muni is doing is changing their mentality from performing their activity according for material purpose and to change that to do that activity for pleasing the Supreme Lord. This situates themselves in the Daiva Varnashram and within devotional activities. Then the second was to point out, since you are able to do this, even according to the Varnashram system, your nature that you should engage in the Lord's service is that of Naistika Brahmachari. There's no need for grihastha ashram for them. So then, you know, this was then, we see with time, this is understood by them. So that is the first benefit. Second is then, we see that so much discussion, because this is a very simple point, right? Very simple point. So it doesn't take much, how you say, depth of contemplation to understand this. That one either understand, one is able to perform the activities nicely, and one is able to realize from those activities, then there's no need of marriage. One hears these activities, one is able to perform the proper devotion, the devotional activities, one is able to understand but not necessarily realize, then he is fit to first class grihastha. Then if there's difficulty performing and there is difficulty understanding, then that means then that will be second class, third class, like this. So now, this is just the conditioned state that we find ourselves in, because we've been in the material world for a long time. And in this time, we have developed many bad habits, bad interests. And so the idea is, this devotional service means understand what is the position, and then engage that position in Krishna's service. So basically we see for the first class position, then it is understood already. Already it is understood and followed, or understood and practiced. Means that we know the material world is difficult, the grihastha ashram is difficult. With that knowledge, one enters that ashram and slowly, slowly, gradually just dissolves the desires that are there. But if that's more difficult, the mind is giving more trouble just due to so much bad habit in previous lifetimes or in this life, then we see that the Bhagavatam uses the harsher presentations, right? It's just like in Ayurveda, is that if the disease is not so strong, then you can use the sattvic, you know, arrangements of herbs. If it is a little stronger, then one may use the rajasic arrangement of the minerals. And if it's more strong, then one uses the tamasic aspects of the poisons, various different kinds of mixtures of medicines that are actually poisonous to the system. But they are, you know, they're not fatal, but they destroy the disease. And then by other medicines, one recuperates from this. So we see that the Bhagavatam uses all these. It presents the knowledge very simply, plainly, or it gives, you know, some advice like this, how to, you know, be very careful about it. And we see that it also speaks in very strong, harsh terms about the grihastha ashram itself. So when the attachment is greater, then generally the medicine must be more harsh. Right? Here we see Narad Muni spoke an allegory, and they immediately understood because of their purified consciousness. So he didn't need to be any harsher than that. He just pointed out the reality of the world. Then, but many times we also see that the reality of the world is we may be attached. So we engage ourselves in the grihastha ashram, we move with the world, but sometimes we get caught up in it. The mind becomes distracted because of the nature of the material world. So that is a reality that we have to move through the world. We have that attachment, we must engage it, but there still is the ultimate reality that still it is based on desire, and that those desires are illusion. The material energy is real. But how we perceive it and what we desire from it and how we act in it, that is the illusion. Right? Gita mentions that you have gold, right? You have pebbles, stones, and gold. So if someone on the Brahman platform understands that they're all the same, because he has no illusions, that material, one aspect of material energy is more valuable than another aspect. It's all the Lord's energy, it can all be engaged. But for someone who has this illusion, they understand this is more valuable and this is less. Because within the material consciousness, it is. It's all, it's, yeah. But it, so, yeah. So then the idea is that at what level we're understanding the reality. It means we have our conditioned reality, we have to deal with that. So that is a reality. But ultimately, that conditioned reality is an illusion. So either it can be broken subtly, or sometimes it has to be broken harshly. Just like we see with Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, he was the emperor. Then after he lost the throne to Yudhishthira, instead of following what all the Kshatriyas do, due to proper training, is that they go to the forest and leave behind the kingdom. He was still attached to the facilities of the kingdom. So he was living in the kingdom. And Yudhishthira didn't mind because he was very happy. It's his uncle. And he's blind. How he'll move about this and that. So they were taking care very nicely in a very royal fashion what he was used to living. But then Vidura came back and said, this is not proper. Kshatriyas are supposed to leave. Once you give up the throne, you're supposed to go to the forest. So Dhritarashtra was not convinced by this. You know, this is the, you know, the point of duty. So then he had to say, you're living just like a dog eating the scraps of the Pandavas. You worked so hard to destroy them, kill them in so many ways. And now those same persons that you've been so inimical towards, now you're living at their mercy. Says, what kind of Kshatriya is this? This is not Kshatriya, this is a dog. So then with that harsh medicine, then Dhritarashtra understood, yes, I'm not properly performing my duty. And then he immediately went to the forest. So, therefore we see the Bhagavatam speaks like this. So it's not the problem with the, in dealing within the varnas and ashrams, is not the that we have the conditioned nature and that there's any difficulty in engaging one or the other. Just like pebble stones and gold. That doesn't matter which one is it's being engaged. It must be engaged in the Lord's service. If they're not doing rabbinical activities or shudra activity, it doesn't matter. If they're engaged in the Lord's activities, they're sat. And if they're not, even the brahminical activities are asat. So that's not the difficulty. The difficulty is if we understand that it is illusory, these desires, and to purify them, we must engage them in Krishna's service. If one understands that, then that is first class. Then the more gentle points get the work done. And if one hears the harsh points, it's not a problem. One's already convinced. But if one is not, if one still gets caught up by habit in the temporary illusions that the mind and the conditioned nature bring up, then sometimes just the simple presentation doesn't get through. And the harsh presentation, as we see like Vidura used on Dhritarashtra, must be given. Then it's talking about Grihastha life as a dark well and this and that and so many very heavy statements. That is so that one wakes up and understands, yes, my attachment to it, that is illusion. My being in it and engaging it in Krishna's service, that's not illusion. That's actually Krishna conscious. But while doing that, I may slip from that standard of knowledge and start to think that this is something very wonderful and nice and, you know, all the facilities and all the relationships, and that's the actual taste, rather than the taste of engaging these things in the Lord's service. So then sometimes these harsh statements are there. So that should be understood. That's why they're here. Sometimes they're used in a very strong, you know, unpalatable way by many. But the principle is that they're there because of the tendency of the devotee, or a tendency of everybody, especially the devotee, Bhagavatam is for the devotee, to become overwhelmed to some degree by the conditioned nature. So one must be constantly reminded that one's in the Grihastha ashram, and one's in the material world, and but the business is to get out. So therefore, the activity shouldn't be asat karma bhir, but sat karma bhir. They should be actually transcendental, that we perform our activities for Krishna's satisfaction. So then, this is the working point here. And now now is being pointed out is there's this hole one goes into, or the desire, bilaswarg means is where one's engaged in the activities, in the karma. Right? Bilaswarg means that they're enjoying the facilities of pious activity, but that pious activity has nothing to do with the Lord. Zero to do with the Lord. Right? Nothing at all. One's not interested in the Lord at all. So the heavenly planets that we generally think about, that is for those who accept the supremacy of the Lord. And then they perform material pious activities and want to materially enjoy, they go there. And then they work in connection with the Lord as, you know, various controllers of the universe and enjoyers of the universe. But still they do it on behalf of the Lord. So there's some touch of their service for the Lord like that. It's not completely disconnected. But bilaswarg means is there the pious activities performed simply based on atheistic principles that we are the controller and enjoyer. And then when they get there, they will get stuck. Because once one's in that mentality, it's very hard to change from this demoniac mentality that I'm the controller and enjoyer to Krishna is. Therefore, Narad Muni mentions once one enters into that hole, that bila, that one generally doesn't come out. Right? It's interesting. The heavenly enjoyment. So bilaswarg means it's lower, it's below these planets. And in there, then one generally, you know, the demoniac nature just is increased and encouraged. We see that all the demons that come up and take over the Indra's position, they're all from bilaswarg. Like that, like Bali Maharaj and that. But they're all down there. They're enjoying, they're very proud of their positions, they're performing their Vedic activities very nicely, they think that I am doing this, I am controlling it, I will enjoy the fruit. And it's very, very difficult. So you see the Gita just emphasizes this point. You're doing it. You can do the activity. Karma nyeva dikadaste ma phaleshu kadachana. That fruit, you're entitled to do your duty, but the fruit, ma phaleshu, that's not ours. That belongs to Krishna. And na karma, na karma hetu apurva, na. Can't remember. Na. That's the last, but the third one. Ma karma phalahetu arbur, that we think we're the ones that actually is making the fruit. I perform the activity, so naturally the fruit that comes is due to my endeavor and is mine. So this is what's happening. So this mentality becomes encouraged in this demoniac situation. Because you think, I am doing the pious activity and I'm getting the pious result and it's mine and I will enjoy it. So Krishna's pointing out is that it's not like that. We perform the activity due to our desire, but it's actually going on and happening because of Krishna and the modes of nature. Krishna sanctions, the modes do. So it's not ours. The fruit's not ours. The endeavor actually isn't ours. So because the endeavor was not ours, actually the fruit doesn't belong to us. Just because I desire, does that mean I deserve it? Let's say I desire now, yes, I should have $1 million, and suddenly $1 million should just land on the table. Right? No, it'll say it's yours because you go out and work for it. Right? You work for it, then you get it, then you can say it's yours. You know? I'm desiring it, somebody walks by, the briefcase falls open, and all the money falls here, and I go, oh, here it is, mine. The guy with the briefcase may have a different idea. You know, I just say, why don't you go out and get a job? You know, it's like that. So the thing is it's, but who worked for it belongs to them. We didn't do it. The modes of nature did the work. So it belongs to the modes of nature. And Krishna sanctioned it so the modes could do, so therefore it belongs to him. So that's what these points are for. So they're presented in a very nice philosophical way, and it's accepted. Or it's given in a very simple, practical way, and it's accepted. Or it's given in a very harsh, straightforward way, and then it should be accepted. And if it's not, then one will have difficulty like that. Because the point is the whole process of the Varnashram is simply to break the attachment with the material world. And the wonderful thing is the normal system of the Varnashram, or the slow path that Krishna talks about, one will take millions of lifetimes going through this step-by-step incremental increasement of the, how you say, of the consciousness, to go through the varnas and through the ashrams like this, life after life, until finally one comes to the, how you say, association of devotees. But he recommends, as you can do this quickly, is don't worry that whatever one's position is, any of the varnas, any of the ashrams, you just take them and engage them in his service. And that automatically gives the result of that whole long millions of lifetime system. And in one lifetime, because what one is doing is sat, then one goes back to Godhead. Here Prabhupada mentions the janma karma cha me divyam. You understand Krishna's activities are transcendental, and you therefore, you perform your activities in relationship to Krishna, which is transcendental. If I understand Krishna's activities are transcendental, activities in relationship to Krishna are transcendental. You know, so even an amazing thing like, you know, GBC doing management is also a transcendental activity. You know, despite, you know, many opinions, it also can be engaged in the Lord's service. So then you can make advancement. It's transcendental because you accept the Lord is transcendental, his activities are transcendental, therefore anything in relationship to him is transcendental. If one understands that, then we become transcendental. Right? Like that. And then, yeah. So that's the... Yeah. And then one returns, one enters the material, the spiritual realm. Krishna's birth is transcendental. So our next birth will be transcendental. One understands that, then that works very, very nicely. Any questions on this? Or?
Yeah. Sometimes these same staples seem to turn people away from
Krishna consciousness. That's the heavy statements, they have a tendency to turn away, that's how they're presented. And it's also, there's the sincerity of, or the, not saying sincerity, but the expertise of one who's speaking them, because there's a purpose behind something. Let us say one goes to the hospital, the doctor checks and he says surgery, right? Now that may seem very harsh, but now if he explains, yes, there's some cancer there, there's a tumor and this and that, then you're happy to go through it. If he says surgery and you say why, and he says you have a blocked nose, you know, like that, then one will think, well, this doesn't have, you know, it doesn't seem balanced here. So if the explanation is full, then one understands. And it's not harsh. It's just reality. But if it's not presented nicely, then it may seem over harsh. Then you also have the sincerity of the person. Because we're still talking about, you know, how to say, that one, each individual has to make that choice. It's not, means the situation surrounding us helps us make a decision, but it itself is not the actual thing. It means Dhruva Maharaj was sitting there, Prahlad Maharaj, with very harsh conditions. But it doesn't turn his attention from the Lord. Right? It means he was put in the harsh condition because he was remembering the Lord. Then nothing happened to him. But in the harsh condition, first he was tested, and he remembered the Lord. It wasn't he was put in the harsh condition, the Lord made nothing happen, and then he decided, oh, the Lord is so wonderful. Right? First it was seen how he remembered the Lord in the harsh condition. Then the Lord then protected him. So if the situations we find ourselves in are harsh, and then from that, we give up Krishna consciousness, then what is that to say for that individual? Of course, one can say if someone else dealt a little more nicely, but still, we're dealing with individuals. An individual has his choice to make or not. And we see in history, those who become great despite the situation push on in their determination. And they get. No one started off, you know, real great. You know, very few started off on the top of the pile and then, you know, went farther. They start off in the bottom of the pile and work their way up. So this is what's being presented, is that the opportunity to become the greatest of great persons, greatest of great individuals, and go back to Godhead and overcome the material world is being offered for everybody. So now it doesn't mean that there's going to be, how do you say, that it necessarily be pleasant. And why it's not pleasant? Spiritual world's pleasant. You know, the situations generally in the material world where things are run according to Krishna's directions are pleasant. Right? Even the hellish planets, I mean the lower planets, the Bilaswar, because they follow the Vedic culture, materially it's pleasant. Right? So what creates unpleasantness is bad activities, bad karma. So if we find ourselves in a situation that's bad, then generally, if we check back, we have created that for ourselves. Our own desires have created this situation now. Because of birth and forgetting the previous lifetimes, we don't connect the two. You know, just like, let's say, I desire something. Let's say I'm thirsty, and I, you know, ask somebody for some water. Then in the time between I ask for that water and the person brings it, I forgot about it. Then when they bring the water, it's like, well, what do I need this water for? What's this water for? You know? So we have performed activities in previous life and we're getting the result now. Because we've forgotten, then we think, you know, well, you know, what's this? You know, where's my independence? You know, like this. Why am I being forced? Like this. No, but we wanted it at some point. We actually desired it, either directly or indirectly. Indirectly by our impious activities, we get the bad result. You know? Or actively by performing an activity, and then we got a good result. So even if we find ourselves in very harsh situations, either that is there due to our previous karma. Right? So Krishna doesn't remove the prarabdha, or the fruit. Because in past we thought it was ours, so we're getting it. We wanted it, Krishna gives us. He doesn't get in the way of our independence. This is the point. We're thinking, if I'm independent, why I should get it? No, you wanted it, Krishna gave it. What Krishna gets in the way of is our material desire, you know, the sprouting of those material desires, and the near fruition of that material desire. That he removes. Because those are the real root of material and entanglement. And the externals around don't necessarily have to disturb the devotional process at all. It may in the beginning, but as one advances, it doesn't. So there is both, on both sides, is that the individual themselves must take the philosophy and apply it in their life and be sincere. And those who are helping others, or at least trying to help, they must also educate themselves and be able to present in such a way to encourage. Like that. The modern concept is, it's always everybody else's fault. I can be a rat bag, but as everybody else has to be encouraging and nice and tolerant and broad-minded. That's the New Age philosophy. You know? But the thing is there's also my, as an individual, I also have to reform myself. Like that. And if I put my most emphasis on that, and everybody does that, it makes life a lot easier. If I have to reform the whole world, it'd be very difficult. You know, I have to reform the whole world so they behave nicely to encourage me to reform myself. So it's difficult. If I can reform the whole world, I don't need their help to reform myself. And if I can reform myself, I can actually help the whole world in their reformation. But if I can't reform myself, basically, one can't reform anybody. One may talk, but there's the ultimate reality. It means it doesn't work. So, both of those things must be there. Does that make some sense? Or?
make sure I understood the point properly, and then I want to ask a small question. That it seems that, according to what you say, the process of karma kanda leads to the sectarian and heavenly planets?
No. That's if you perform karma kanda as an atheist, that will take one to those lower planets. If one performs those as, you know, someone who accepts the authority of the Lord in that, then that takes one to the upper planets, heavenly planets.
Wouldn't that be karma yoga then?
No, not necessarily. Because the, how you say, the karma yoga has two branches. That's nishkam and sakam. So nishkam actually purifies very dynamically. Sakam, depending upon the level of understanding, then purifies. It may be I put Krishna as my prominent goal, means no compromise. But I have all these material desires, so I'm going to fulfill them, you know, with the hope that they kind of go away. But I'm still attached to the results. So that's sakam. But it still works. It still, one progresses, though more slowly than the nishkam. A lot more slowly. But still, because the goal is there. Now, if we put, okay, we understand Krishna's there and all that, but sidelining that and getting the fruits and all those, the temporary is the more prominent aspect. And well, later, then that gives more rise to the heavenly aspects. Like that. Going there. So one has to be very careful about that. Because it's, what we see in all of these is simply consciousness. The same activity, the same proper activity is being performed by many persons. One, they're being very quickly purified and coming to the platform of Brahmabhuta. Another ones, they're more slowly becoming purified, but they're progressing towards that. Another ones, they're devotees, but they're going to the heavenly planets. And another, they're non-devotees, and they're going to the lower heavenly planets. But the same activity is being performed by all. That's why Krishna puts so much emphasis on the activity. Because that's what gets it done. I understand my relationship, I understand my goal, but how I do that, that makes the difference. You know? That makes whether it's quick or slow. So consciousness is very, very, that's simply in consciousness, I put Krishna as the center of the house, means factually, and all other activities that I do are adjusted according to that. Means I'll compromise all my other activities for Krishna. But if it's like I won't compromise my activities, but I say Krishna is my goal, I'm not a grihastha, I'm a grihamedi. Though I may be very pious and devotional, but I've made the griha the central. And then Krishna, I may compromise some of my Krishna consciousness for the griha. That's griha maybe. It's a very, just a change in consciousness. And that may happen one day grihastha, one day griha maybe. You know, or 3 days grihastha, one day, like this. You know, when you have good days, it's up, down, and bad days, it's down. But the point is one knows these things. That's why it's given in the scripture. And if one finds oneself in these situations, like it's described in the forest of enjoyment and all these, one finds that consciousness is there, then one knows, oh, I have to be a little more careful. It doesn't mean that one leaves. It just means that one has to change the consciousness. Because once the consciousness is changed and fixed, that's the fruit of the grihastha ashram, is that one has now become an actual proper grihastha. One is situated in nishkam karma. And one has seen that the activities of the grihastha ashram, these are illusory. And it was simply due to my conditioned attachments that I felt that they were very important. You know, but now one is happy and satisfied. One went through them. One gained that experience. One gained that knowledge and realization. Now, naturally, then one goes into vanaprastha. And then one puts more emphasis on the studying and helping train others. You know, give others that experience that one has gained by going through it. So it's practice. It's still sadhana bhakti. Like that. As long as it's seen. And then to that degree it's not, then the consciousness goes down. So one has to be very careful. As Prabhupada mentions, I think he was talking, many letters where he's talking, they asked Prabhupada if some devotee who died went back to Godhead. And he mentions if they thought of Krishna, then they'll go there, and then if this, then they may go to the heavenly planets and then come back, like that. So one has to be very careful, like that, of what is the platform of consciousness. It's simply that. It means the external is the activity. That's why Lord, Ramananda Rai, when Lord Chaitanya asked, well, what is the, you know, essence of the scriptures, and he said Varnashram Dharma, he said that's external. That doesn't mean it was Maya. It just means that's the external aspect of it. And then he gets into the consciousness. Then he starts seeing the consciousness. Then a consciousness, then pure devotional service. Of pure devotional service, then you have the five rasas. Of the five rasas, then the gopis. And of the gopis, then Radharani. So the consciousness that is there, that's the most important element. And it's kind of like the externals of Varnashram, that's just automatic. It's just, you know, that's natural. Like that. Like Arjuna quoted Varnashram in the beginning. He saw this is going to be a bad war. And, you know, we're going to lose. I mean, their idea was, I'll go to the battlefield. You know, we'll go out there. We'll kill Duryodhana and his brothers. And then with everybody else, all the other relatives, they have no problem. They'll be sitting there with Bhishma and Drona and all their other relatives, and it'd be a wonderful empire. But when it was realized that when we get out there, that we're going to lose everybody that we care about, then it's kind of like the empire didn't look so good anymore. So he was still thinking within Varnashram. He didn't drop from the human platform. But he only saw the external aspect. The consciousness was not there. So Krishna told him he's a fool. And then Arjuna, and then he explained about the soul, and about then getting into, not into material activities, and giving up attachment to the material world. And Arjuna thought, great, okay, I'll give this up, I'll go to the forest. Arjuna, and Krishna said, no, you're gonna go out on that battlefield, you're gonna fight. And Arjuna's going, what's going on here? I just quoted Varnashram, and then you told me it's external and I'm a fool. And then you told me about all this nice internal stuff, and I want to go do it, and now you're telling me do all this external. So he's confused. So Krishna has to explain this basically through the whole Gita. The confusion stays till the 18th chapter. Only then in the 18th chapter, then the illusion goes. Is that it's understood as you do the externals of the Varnashram, but you do it for Krishna. Like that. Then it becomes devotional service. Otherwise, Varnashram on its own is indirect. It's Krishna's path, but it's indirect. It's the slow path. Because you don't realize Krishna's there until you get to the top end of the yoga system after completing karma and jnana. And then you see the super soul and you're fortunate enough to understand this is the Lord and I'm his servant. Then the fast path starts after millions and millions of lifetimes. So he's just saying, just where you are now, just take up the fast path. You just change what you're doing, do it for Krishna. That's all. So the externals stay the same. You just change the mood. You change your consciousness. So this is what's the most bewildering. It's that many times devotees want to establish Varnashram. They try to do it without changing the consciousness. Now, we don't need that. It's not important. That's why you see Prabhupada sometimes saying bad things, or how you say, the downside of the Varnashram, and speaking strongly against it, and Lord Chaitanya against the Tattvavadis who are totally into Varnashram and this and that. At the same time, he's just speaking Daiva Varnashram. Because Daiva means it's the external with the internal understanding, the internal consciousness. That makes the external Daiva. Because if you just take the external on its own, useless. Like devotees would quote Manasamhita, and Prabhupada said, according to Manasamhita, you're Malecha. Because the consciousness is still Malecha. So therefore, don't touch it. But you're supposed to change the consciousness, then that makes one a Brahman, and then one is fit for Daiva Varnashram. Right? A devotee is a Brahman, automatically, by consciousness. Now that doesn't mean that we don't now develop the externals that match it. Right? If you have someone who's a saintly person, but they speak in really rough language and they deal very roughly, you'll think that, well, the inside and the outside don't match. Like that. One likes to see saintly people who inside are gentle and outside. Right? You like to see both. So therefore, is Prabhupada's thing is you change the inside, then you actually have devotional service. You actually have the fast path. So that's the first thing to establish, the topmost aspect. The varnashram is the lower aspect. Though we tend to throw it the other way around. Oh, just the simple chanting Hare Krishna and the temple program. It's all basics. But now as we're 20, 30 years in the movement, now we get into the more fine, refined, and now the varnashram and the economics and all this and that. That's the real substance. No, it's the other way around. That has no substance without the internal. So if we will compromise the Krishna consciousness for that, it means we didn't understand. The same as Arjuna. We're right back to the first chapter of Gita. Is that we're willing to compromise Krishna consciousness for social development. That means Grihamedi. So Krishna's saying, no. You establish the consciousness first. That puts one on the fast path. Now look at where you are on that path. What is your varna nature according to your karma, your just previous conditioned karma? Now engage that in Krishna's service. Then it works very nicely. It's very simple. If one understands this, the element of consciousness, like that. Therefore, what Prabhupada did was the most amazing. Because others went, Prabhupada, the other godbrothers of Prabhupada went and tried to establish the externals. Like that. And they themselves changed their externals. They came back in suits and eating with knives and forks and, you know, speaking in nice British accents and all that, but they weren't able to implement Krishna consciousness. Well, Prabhupada just went in and just changed the consciousness. It's amazing. You see, when Prabhupada got to San Francisco, then Mukunda and a few other devotees had gone there. I think three devotees had gone and started, I think 6 months or something before Prabhupada came, preaching there. You have all these hippies, long hair, still smoking their pot, still going to the donut shop, and you know, everything like that. But what are they talking? They all know Krishna is God, I am his servant, chanting Hare Krishna is the process. Like this, immediately the consciousness is the first thing implanted. That's all the devotees knew. They didn't know how to implement the whole varnashram and all that. It's complicated, but it's secondary. You know, because spiritual is very simple. It's just based on love. It's based on that exchange. Material world, because that's not there, is very complicated, right? Like if I know how to do something, like I know how to drive, it's simple. I get the key, turn the thing, get in the car, sit down, turn the key here, push on a few pedals, and drive off. Very simple. I don't know anything about driving. I got to look and read a whole manual and go to a school and a whole thing to be able to figure out what's going on. Because the material world is very complicated. Like that. So the varnashram is very complicated because you're dealing with material desire. If you're dealing with pure love, then you know how they'll act. Right? And if they don't act like that, that's rasabhas. But material world, the whole thing's rasabhas. So you have to have the rules to at least bring it in line that it looks a little like the reflection. You know? Like that. It's a tree reflected in the water. You shouldn't see a goat or something there. So varnashram is bring it in line so you actually see a tree in the water. Then you can start, then it's very easy to then connect to the real tree. Like that, though you have to change the consciousness. So Prabhupada did is the most amazing. He went to most unqualified people and implanted the transcendental consciousness. And then with time, slowly just created the outside that matches that consciousness. You know? So then it's very important that that's understood. Then one can apply the varnashram. Otherwise, then one will take it and then it becomes very harsh. It means we see devotees have tried. They throw it out. You can't even use the words anymore. You can't use the word Shudra or Vaishya or this. You can't say it. You bring it up in a discussion and people say, oh, no, you can't say that. You know? Yeah. That's like, you know, you can't. It's like saying, oh, you can't say someone's got a cold. Right? Oh, they're defective and this and that. You have to say, how you say it? They are how do you say? The indisposed. No, they're mucus enhanced. You know? Like that. Or they're breathing impaired or something. Or how do you say? Yeah. Like that. You have to use, then it's okay. You can't just say they got a cold. So you can't say someone has a Vaishya nature. That's a conditioned nature. Who cares what they did in millions of lifetimes to be in that position? No, it doesn't matter. They use that in Krishna service. They're just as fine a devotee as someone else who's using a different mode. Because the ultimate comes back to who is Kanishta Madhyamutam. That's the real thing. Not what you are doing. Well, someone may be, we see here so many kings in that, and they're on the platform of Hamsas or Paramahamsas. Someone may be Brahman, but be on Kanishta platform or below. Who cares? You know? Like that. So that's why you get these shlokas that say, you know, someone from a dog eater's family, they can be guru, and a Brahman who doesn't know Krishna, he's not a guru. Because the externals is the secondary. But we see that everybody who is devotee, because it's Krishna's system, it's Krishna's culture, Krishna likes to work within it. When Krishna comes to the world, he wants a guru. He wants parents that act like parents, you know? He wants a community that acts like community. Brahmins that act like Brahmins, Kshatriyas like Kshatriyas. You know? Krishna and Vrindavan, they grow their grains, they have their milk and milk products, and they want to go to, he likes to go to Mathura and pay the tax. Right? Because the Kshatriya does his work. And they as Vaishyas do theirs, Madhu Mangal as a Brahmin does his. You know, Purnamasi, she does all the different things to the community, she's Brahmin. Like that. So Krishna likes that. So when he comes here, he wants to move in that culture. Because it's his culture. Just in the spiritual realm, it's based on prema. And here, it's just based on rules and regulations. His idea is do his culture, right? But switch it to love for Krishna. So it's natural for the devotee, wherever they find themselves, to start in that position and then elevate themselves. Because Krishna mentions, even if we're in passion or ignorance, because he's recommended, you know, activities in goodness, especially 17th to 18th chapter, is that that's the best situation to perform your devotional activities. Use the mode of goodness in Krishna's service. But he says, I'll accept even passion and ignorance if it's done for him. Like that. So we start there, but we shouldn't remain there. We can't say, well, when Prabhupada is here, then we did. You know, when Prabhupada is here, we used to go to the cemetery and steal the flowers, you know, and offer them to the deities. We can't say that that's what we'll do now. You know, knowledge is greater. Everything has been developed. So like that, it's the Varnashram has to be implemented from the inside out. Like that. When you have the consciousness of a Brahman, the activities become natural. You have the consciousness of a Kshatriya, the activities become natural. You have the consciousness of a Vaishya, those activities become natural. Shudra become natural. Like that. And if one doesn't, then it won't work. Or if Grihastha. Once the mentality is there, the ashram works very nicely. You know? Like that. And the Bhagavatam has to remind us every now and again that, you know, don't get too caught up in the pleasantries. It means one should do it. If you do it nicely, it will have its pleasantries. But ultimately, you have to understand that doing those activities are because Krishna is said to do them. And you should do them for Krishna. Right? It means Grihastha has children. It's not that the inter-exchange with the children is not going to be wonderful. But one has to remember is that they're devotees. And this is your service. You know, not that I just enjoy that exchange. That's the illusory part. That'll be there automatically. But I must always remember the higher part, or the consciousness part. The externals will always be there. You know, patting little kids on the head's always nice. You know, unless they bite. But otherwise, it's always nice. But it doesn't mean that we don't understand this is a devotee, and that I have to give proper example, I have to give good instruction, I must give them what is the best in Krishna consciousness. Like that. That internal must be there also. Then, not only is the external nice, but then one advances. Now, if the internal is not proper, then it's very rare to get the externals to work proper. Because it's not that we're coming from wonderful backgrounds where we have a nicely working external culture that we can fall back on. Right? I remember Prabhupada mentioned, I think, about one devotee here in Mayapur. Someone was saying about... forget how long. He'd just been a devotee, I forget how long. Very short time. And he wasn't so old. And Prabhupada wanted to give him some rest. He's one of Prabhupada's servants. So then the others said, well, you know, what if he, you know, is not able to maintain and he falls down? Prabhupada says, that's no problem. He'll fall down to the mode of goodness. You know? I mean, his life, everything was just so much in the goodness, is that if he can't stay in the platform transcendental, he'll just fall down to goodness. So it's not a big deal. Like that. So it's, but they came from, you know, very traditional cultured background and all this. You know, they followed these things that Prabhupada talks about in the Bhagavatam. So, you know, many of the, you know, Western world don't have necessarily such a culture to fall back on. It's not that, okay, if we don't follow the Vedic culture of, you know, household life, we'll fall back onto, you know, how our parents grew up and fought like cats and dogs and got separated and divorced and got remarried and, you know, I'm on my third mother now. And, you know, like, I can fall back onto that. It's a great, that's a great inspiration. Like that. So, that's what Prabhupada recommends, is that one change the consciousness, but also try to implement along with that the Vedic, which generally has a few less, you know, how you say, less disturbances like that. But unless it's understood, the external application of it without understanding can also be very difficult, because it's very fine. So something very fine can also sometimes create more problem. Right? Something gross, you can only do so much with it. Something fine can create, either you get the best result or you can get something pretty wild.
Small thing I did not understand here is that you spoke about persons like Bali Maharaj staying in the center, but they follow the Vedic culture, that means they have a concept of authority.
So it means even the demons accept authority.
So they accept demigods?
They accept it there, but they kind of feel that they should be the demigods. They accept authority. Bali Maharaj is the king, everyone accepts him. Right? Because Vedic culture means you're based on knowledge, sense control, respect of authority, like that, humility, these things must be there. Then the demoniac side, humility is less, because you don't understand. There's something in dealings, in etiquette, though in consciousness there isn't. That's a very major thing. This lack of respect of authority is one of the major, it's a major stumbling block on devotional service, because you can't actually be human unless one accepts that principle. And unfortunately, the modern New Age theories make that a very high priority. And as devotees take that up, are influenced by that, then their devotional life becomes compromised to the extreme. Like that, it's a very dangerous principle to give up. Oh, cleanliness, that's the other, cleanliness. Means that's what the brahmacharya starts with. Right? Then from there, then he builds on and then he'll become a good grihastha. If he's not sense controlled, doesn't have knowledge, doesn't respect authority, you know, if you don't respect authority, you can't have respect for the individual. It doesn't work. Some will say they respect the individual but not the authority, but they actually don't. Because the authority is also an individual. And you'll see that those who speak in this way, they have an issue or a movement, then those within the movement agree with the movement, they're very individual and personal with it. Outside the movement, they're ferocious, they're fascists. They're very rough, you know, like that. So the whole point is it can't work unless there is respect. Respect for authority means I respect for the individual. So that's why the Vedic culture always starts with the individual. Learn yourself, then learn how to reciprocate with others, and then from those who can do that, then they can learn how to manage the whole thing to see that everybody's properly situated and sheltered. Like that. So that's the... What time is it now?
10:59.
Oh, okay. So then it is late. We'll end here. Sorry. Grantarashimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki. Jainita Gaurapanandi.